So he says, okay, I'm also going to have seven Himmels. He finds out it's like the seven Himmels are the home of Hashem, the place for Hashem. He finds out that Hashem's place is in the seven Himmels. Not only the seven Himmels, but the earth. Not only the earth, but the ocean. Hashem is the God of the ocean. So he says, look, I want to be the God of the seven heavens and the ocean. So what did he do? He built himself. He found out that Hashem's place is also the ocean. He says, okay, I'm going to make a place for myself. I'm going to build a palace. And it's going to be in the ocean to show I'm the God of the ocean. And it's going to be seven stories high. And it's going to be in the ocean. Okay. He built a palace. Now, I don't know if it was under the water completely or sticking out. But it was some kind of a palace with seven big floors, like a big building of seven floors, and it was in the ocean. Okay. Then he reads that Hashem makes thunder and lightning. Oh, he says, that would be good to tell people that I make thunder and lightning. So he got some kind of special stones that you put these stones near to each other and they have some kind of a koyach. I don't know exactly how it worked. And they made thunder and lightning. So if a person would ever come to his palace, he would say, look, I'm the God of the heavens and the earth and the oceans, and I make thunder and lightning. And if the person would say, eh, Baba Meisens, I don't believe it, all of a sudden he'd start hearing thunder and seeing lightning flashing. Oh, that's right. Hiram is the God of the heavens and the earth and the oceans, and he makes thunder and lightning. And then one day, Hiram hears that Hashem is higher than the seven heavens and the earth and the oceans. Not only he's in them, but he's higher than them. Now, through some kind of magic, Hiram figured out a way that he'd be able to do a trick that nobody else was able to do, that he could fly up in the air and stand in the middle of the air without a ladder, without strings, without anything holding him up. Now, he could do that. Nobody else could do it. So he'd go by his palace and fly up into the air above the seven stories of his palace and stand in the middle of the air, and he'd say, look, I'm above the seven heavens and the earth and the ocean. Of course, he learned that from Hashem. Hashem is above, higher than everything. He says, Hiram, I'm Hiram, the highest God in the whole world. I'm above everything. And he used to brag. Not only that, he lived a very long time. Do you know how long he lived? Over 1,000 years. Not only that, over 1,200 years. 1,200 years. Shh. Okay. Now, as great as he was, of course, he never admitted that he was getting all of this long life and all of this koyach from Hashem. Like everything comes from Hashem. He never admitted. He just wanted to fool people and say, it's coming from me, I'm the God. Now, at that time, there was a Navi in Eretz Israel named Yechezkel. The great Navi Yechezkel, you might have heard of him, that he saw the Merkava and the Shemaim. He saw the different Malachim and different worlds, the very Helike Nevuah that he had. And Hashem said to Yechezkel, I'm sending you to Tzoyer, to Hiram, to warn him that he better make himself to be lower and not so high, and he should admit that he's not a god, he's only a person, and that everything that he gets is only from Hashem, and he should recognize that everything comes from Hashem, and not to make people fooled to think that he's a god who's the god of the world and higher than everything else, and the god of the ocean. Go and warn this Hiram to come down from his great place, or else he's going to get punished. Now Yechezkel said to Hashem, of course, Yechezkel is a great tzaddik, he wants to do what Hashem said, but he said that I've heard that whoever goes near Hiram and Hiram doesn't want to talk to him, he flies up in the air. And a person can't fly up in the air, only Hiram knows how to do it by some kind of a magic trick. So a person, let's say, is going to Hiram to tell him something, and Hiram doesn't want to talk to him. All of a sudden, ping, Hiram flies up in the air, and the person can't get near Hiram. So Yechezkel is going to say, so Yechezkel says to Hashem, when I come to Hiram, he'll recognize that I'm a Yid. He won't want to listen to me, and he'll fly up in the air. And he goes so high, I wouldn't be able to scream that loud for him to hear me, especially if he starts making the thunder and the lightning with his special rocks and all kinds of tricks that he does. So he won't be able to hear anything I'm saying, and the ocean is making noise. Hashem said, Yechezkel, I know that. Don't worry. I'm sending you to do what you have to do, and I'll take care of what I have to do. So Yechezkel travels now to Hiram, to Tzoyer, to Hiram's palace. And Hiram sees a Yid coming. He says, I don't want to speak to a Yid. Bing! He flies up in the air. All of a sudden, the Eibishter makes a wind, a special wind, only blowing on Yechezkel. And the wind, all of a sudden, takes Yechezkel also standing up in the air. Right in front of Hiram. Hiram starts to get afraid. How did you get up here? He says, look, I don't have to tell you exactly how I got up here. The main thing I have to tell you is that Hashem is warning you not to make yourself to be so high, and you better make yourself to be lower and not a god, because you're not a god. You're just fooling everybody. And Hiram did not listen. And he went on to be chutzpedik. Now, Kin Alach, I told you that Hashem said if he doesn't do tshuva, he's going to get punished. Maybe I better not tell you the terrible punishment that came to Hiram. All right. Just don't tell anybody when you're eating. And don't listen to this before you go to sleep. Later on, Kin Alach, the terrible Rasha Nebuchadnezzar from Bavel started to go and conquer the world. He wanted to be the greatest king. And he heard about Hiram in Tzoyer, who made himself to be the greatest king. And Nebuchadnezzar said, I'm going to be the greatest king, and I'll show Hiram that I'm a greater king than him. And he went. He made a war against Hiram. He captured Hiram, and he captured Hiram's mother. He did terrible things to Hiram's mother, which of course made Hiram feel very bad. But then, maybe I shouldn't tell you this because it's just horrible. Okay, the only reason I would tell you is because I'm just showing you that Hashem takes a Rasha who thinks he's very great and he puts him down to the lowest of the low. Nebuchadnezzar took Hiram and he killed Hiram. But that wasn't the end of it. He wanted to show everybody that he was greater than Hiram. So what did Nebuchadnezzar do? I shouldn't tell you. All right. Every day for supper, as we know, Nebuchadnezzar ate terrible things like live animals. Nebuchadnezzar was such a rasha, eat live animals. He rode a lion. What he did was, every single day, he took a piece of Hiram and he ate it for supper. And the next night, he took another piece of Hiram and he ate him for supper. One night, what's for supper? Baked Hiram, and he eats Hiram. What's tonight for supper? Hiram with mayonnaise and mustard. What's tomorrow night for supper? Well, we're going to fry pieces of Hiram with vegetables and eat Hiram. And another night, what's for supper tonight? Well, we'll have Hiram with tomato sauce. And he dipped them in vinegar, and he dipped them in different kind of mayonnaise and ketchup and sauce. Until he ate Hiram, he finished off the whole Hiram. And so Hiram now, instead of being very great, was very low. Now, Kin Alach, Nebuchadnezzar also made himself to be a big god and a big Baal Gaiva, and the Eibishter also took care of him in terrible ways. Maybe I've told you enough, I shouldn't tell you anymore. But during the end of Nebuchadnezzar's life, he used to sit on his throne, and he used to boss everybody around. And I told you once he even bossed animals around. He could tell a bird in the sky, stop flying, and the bird would stop flying. He would tell a tiger or a lion from the jungle, come here to me. And the tiger or the lion would come here to him, and he would ride on the wild lion just by telling them. He was a king, a powerful king. But of course, he also made himself to be too powerful and too great and too big a Baal Gaiva. And one day, Nebuchadnezzar stands up from his throne and he goes walking. Now, many times Nebuchadnezzar stood up from his throne and goes walking. Where's Nebuchadnezzar going? He didn't tell his officers where he's going. Well, maybe he's going for a walk in the city that everybody should bow down to him. He likes to do that, to see how, you know, people bow down to him. He gets off the throne, he walks out of the palace, all of a sudden he takes off his crown. Oy, why is the king taking off his crown? He takes off his robes. Why is the king taking off his king's robes? He always goes in his special clothes. He goes down the road and he starts going off the road. Why is he going off the road? He starts going down on his hands and knees and walking on all fours like an animal. And then he starts eating the grass from the ground. He became like an animal. He's eating grass. Why isn't he going to the royal kitchen or they serve him by the table eating delicious food? He started eating grass like an animal. And he lived in the fields like an animal. And he joined groups of animals like wild horses and tigers and lions and wild buffaloes. And he was just like an animal, living in the jungle and the forests. And that was the end of Nebuchadnezzar. Actually, it was a more terrible end, but I shouldn't tell you. What was the end? The sad end of Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, what happened in the end to Nebuchadnezzar? I'll tell you. In the end, he was buried. He passed away and he was buried. Now he had a son named Evil Meroidach. Also a big Rasha, like his daddy. Evil Meroidach knew that his father was buried, but the people of Bavel, they didn't know. And later on, the people used to say, yeah, Nebuchadnezzar, he became a behemoth. He's an animal in the field, just like a horse, like a buffalo, like a cow, like a wild animal. Yeah, Nebuchadnezzar, a wild animal in the jungle. Now, Evil Meroidach, the son, hears this about his father. Yeah, your father's a behemoth in the jungle eating grass on the ground like an animal. Now, is that honor for his father? What is an honor for the person? Of course, at the end of their life, they should be buried like a person, not like an animal that's in the field. They're buried like a person, and that's an honor for a person. As we know, lahavdil by Yidden, I mean, in a Levaya is a covet for a person, a great honor. And Evel Moreidach felt very bad. Look, the people of Bavel, they think my father was an animal or still an animal. They don't know he was buried like a person. And he would tell people, no, my father is buried like a person. He's not an animal. He passed away and he was buried. Now we don't believe you. We don't believe you. Your father's an animal in the field like a wild cow, like a wild tiger. He's in the field eating grass like an animal. Now Evel Moreidach wanted people to believe him, but they wouldn't believe him. Finally, people said, the only way we're going to believe you is if we go and we dig up the cave there to see. Now, is that a nice thing to do, to go to the cave there and dig it up to see? No. A terrible thing. And the Bavlim did a terrible, terrible thing. Maybe I shouldn't tell you. It's so terrible. All right. Some of the people of Bavel went for Evel Meroidach and he said, here is the place my father is buried. And they dug it up. And sure enough, inside there, they found Nebuchadnezzar. But then the people said, you know what? We believe it now, But if we tell the other people of Babel, they're not going to believe it because they still think your father's an animal in the jungle and in the forest. So we're going to show everybody. You know what they did? They took Nebuchadnezzar. They tied him to a horse. And they schlepped him on a big chain. And he was behind the horse. And he was on the ground. And they took him all around Babel. The people saw Nebuchadnezzar going around on the road, and that's how they showed that he really passed away. He was a person, and he wasn't still an animal in the field. Now, is that a covet to Nebuchadnezzar, or a terrible low thing for Nebuchadnezzar? Why did he get the terrible low thing? Since he made himself to be such a big balgaive and so high, so Hashem takes a big balgaive, and instead of being high, he makes him very low. And there was another person that Hashem brought him down from being very high to very low. You want to hear about him?
Yeah.
There was a king named Joash, a Jew, and somebody was after him to get him. It was a woman. Her name was Ataliyahu. And she was out to kill Joash. Whatever the story was, I'm not going to go into everything. And Joash had to run and hide. Where is a hiding place that she would never think to go? He figured it out. A place that nobody would ever think to go to find somebody hiding is the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the Beis HaMikdash. Because nobody ever went in there except for one person, the Kohen Gadol, and only one day of the year, Yom Kippur. And the rest of the time it was empty, and nobody would ever think to go in there. Especially to find somebody who was hiding. And Yoyash decided he's going to sneak in the Beis HaMikdash and go and hide in the Kodesh HaKadoshim from Ataliyahu, because he was very afraid. And even though, as we know, it was dangerous to go in there, because the Kohen Gadol didn't even come out alive necessarily on Yom Kippur, when he was even allowed to go in, and he was allowed to go in. Nevertheless, because Yoash was afraid of Ataliyahu, the lady after him, boy, she must have been a mean lady, he went in and he was hiding in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And he didn't come out. You know for how long? 6 years. He was hiding in the Kodesh HaKadoshim for 6 years. Exactly how he kept alive and what he did and how he ate, I don't know. All right, now the question is, of course, what happened on Yom Kippur when the Kohen Gadol went in there? Did he find Yoash in there or not? I don't know, maybe he was hiding behind the Aron HaKodesh or something, I don't know. But the fact is, it says he was in there for 6 years. And finally he came out because he heard that Ataliyahu was now passed away. Or somebody took care of her or whatever. Anyway, it wasn't a danger for him. He came out. And all of a sudden people said, "Look, it's Yoash. Where have you been for 6 years?" "Well, I was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim." "You were in the Kodesh HaKadoshim for 6 years?" People said, "Listen, Yoash was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim for 6 years." "Ooh." They said, "Even the Kohen Gadol is only allowed there only during Yom Kippur. And he doesn't necessarily come out alive. And here Yoash is there for 6 years. How could you be in there for 6 years and come out alive?" And then somebody says, "Yoash is a god. He's Halik. He's special. He's got a big Halik of Koyach." And people started bowing down to Yoash. "Yoash, Yoash, Yoash, you're so great." Now, unfortunately, Yoash must have had some kind of a gaive inside of him that grew bigger and bigger and bigger until he believed it. He believed it himself. You know, sometimes a person can tell you something. At first you think, you know, it's not true. But if everybody's telling you, you start believing it yourself that it's true. He started saying to himself, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, look how good I am. Look how special I am. Look, I was in the Kodesh Kadashim for 6 years. Look, look, I am great. Look at the people bowing down to me. Look, people are bowing down to me, calling me a god. Look, Maybe I'm a... Maybe... No, I am a god, yes. And he made himself to be very special and very halic. And a big Balgaiva. He became a big Balgaiva. Until also, unfortunately, from being very high, he became very low. Because there was a country called Aram. They made a war. They attacked him. He was very sick. And his servants were taking care of him. And his servants said, look, how special is he? How great is he? He's old and he's sick and he's a nothing. And even they made a plan against him, probably to get his money and take over his stuff. And his servants, in the end of his life, killed him. So he started very high. In the end, he became very low. Because Hashem takes a big Balgaiva who's very high, and he shows him what he really is, very low. And Kinalach, a tzaddik and a yid, and a person that's connected to Hashem, how do they feel in themselves? They feel very low. What means very low? I mean, they could be a very great person like Moshe Rabbeinu, but they hold themselves low, meaning they know everything comes from Hashem. And a person that is like that, Hashem makes them very great. You hold yourself very low, Hashem will lift you up to be very great, but a real great, an emissary greatness, not a false greatness.
Question again. Why did the Kohen Gadol die when he went in the Kadosh Kedashim and he died from thinking one bad thought and he didn't, even though he's a regular person?
That's a good question. You understand the question? Do you remember the two brothers, Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech? Big tzaddikim brothers? Okay. One time they were caught by the police for learning Torah with people or doing mitzvahs with people, something they were caught for in Yiddishkeit, and it was against the law then at that time in Russia or Poland, wherever they were, and they were thrown in jail. And in jail, it's a big pit, a big hole in the ground. And they caught them in the morning on the way to shul. And the police didn't let them go to shul. They grabbed them and they said, you're going to jail. And they threw them into the big pit, the big hole in the ground. And when they went down there, they saw these criminals. You know what are criminals? The bad guys that are in the jail. And here's two Heliki Yidden in the jail with all these criminals in the bottom of the pit early in the morning. And what are they going to do? Well, all of a sudden, you know, the criminals were waking up in the jail. And the first thing, of course, the person has to do in the morning, he has to go and use the basic kisei. He has to go to the bathroom. Now, in those days, and in the pit that was the jail, they didn't have a bathroom. They didn't have, you know, a bathroom like we have. Bichlal, even in those days, they didn't have a bathroom like we have in the house. They went outside somewhere. Here you can't go outside. You know, it's one hole. So the guard lowers down like a bucket on a rope. And it goes down now into the pit. And the prisoners are supposed to use this as the basic kisei in one part of the big place, like one big room. Now, are you allowed to daven or think Torah in such a place now? In other words, now the whole place is like a basic kisei because the prisoners are using now this bucket as a basic kisei. That's what they did in the jail. And all of a sudden now, Reb Zusha says to Reb Elimelech, wait a minute, we have to daven. We didn't daven yet because we were taken away on the way to shul and it's the morning and now we can't daven. Because this now is like a basic kisei. We can't even think Torah or speak Torah, and especially we cannot daven. We can't say Hashem's name in davening. We can't put our talis and tefillin in such a place. And Rabbi Elimelech says, well, let's wait. Well, Kinalach, the time goes on, and the prisoners were already done with what they had to do. but the guard had forgotten to pull up the bucket. So it was still there. And the time is going on, and Rabbi Zusha says to Rabbi Elimelech, Oy vey, what are we going to do? Because we have to daven, and in the morning we have to daven, and we have to serve Hashem, and now we can't do it because this bucket is here. What are we going to do? Rabbi Elimelech says, well, let's wait. And more time goes by, and the guard still didn't pull up the bucket, and the time is going on. It's getting late, you know, you're supposed to daven by a certain time in the morning. And Reb Zusha comes to Reb Elimelech and says, Elimelech, my brother, the time is going on and we didn't daven yet, and we're not allowed to daven over here. What are we going to do? And Reb Elimelech says to Reb Zusha, Reb Zusha, why are you worried and upset now? He says, because we have to daven, and we didn't serve Hashem by davening yet. And Reb Elimelech says, and my brother Reb Zusha, who says we're supposed to daven in the morning? Zusha says, Hashem says we're supposed to daven in the morning. And Rabbi Elimelech says, and who says that right now we're not allowed to daven? Because the bucket is still there. And Rabbi Zusha says, Hashem says we're not allowed to daven. And so Rabbi Elimelech says to Rabbi Zusha, wait a minute. Hashem says in the morning you're supposed to daven. But Hashem also says that in case you're in such a place like this, that you're not allowed to daven, so you're not allowed to daven. Right? So he says, look, just in the same way we would be serving Hashem and doing what Hashem wants, if we were davening right now, because we're not allowed to daven, so we're serving Hashem by not davening. We're doing what Hashem wants by not davening. So in the same way that if we were davening, we'd do what Hashem wants. So now we're doing what Hashem wants by not davening. So we're still doing what Hashem wants because we're not davening. Because who says not to daven? Hashem says not to daven. All of a sudden, Reb Zusha, he thinks to himself, you mean right now we're doing what Hashem wants? So Reb Zusha says, you mean right now we're serving Hashem? We're doing what Hashem wants by not davening? Just as if in the same way as if we were davening, we do what Hashem wants? Rabbi Elimelech says, yeah. So all of a sudden, Rabbi Zusha said, wait a minute, we're doing what Hashem wants by not davening. That means we're close to Hashem. We're doing what Hashem wants. We're not going against Hashem. We're doing what Hashem wants. And he got so happy that he was close to Hashem, he started to sing and dance. He started to jump up and down and dance around. He was so happy that right now he's close to Hashem. He's connected with Hashem. And all of a sudden now, Reb Elimelech sees Reb Zusha dancing in besimcha. You know, when a person's happy, it makes other people happy. And Reb Elimelech starts to dance with Reb Zusha. And in the middle of the hall, they start dancing. Now, the prisoners that were over there, they hadn't seen people happy in a long time. And all of a sudden, these two yidden are dancing and singing. And all of a sudden, you know, they also got up and they got happy and they also joined in and started singing and dancing. And pretty soon, everybody in the hall was singing and dancing. And up on top, the guards were hearing all this tumult and all this singing and dancing. They said, what's going on over here? What's happening in the hall? The prisoners are making some kind of a thing over there. And they go look down, they see a whole big circle of people singing and dancing in the hall. They start screaming, why are you singing and dancing? What's going on? And they said, because of the bucket. That's why we're singing and dancing. The bucket. Oh, the bucket. We forgot the bucket. And they pulled the rope and they schlepped out the bucket. They took out the bucket. And Rabbi Zusha and Elimelech put on the talis and tefillin and davened. Because now they could daven. You see? In other words, there are different ways to serve Hashem. Sometimes you serve Hashem in this way, but sometimes Hashem says you have to serve him in a different way. But both ways are serving Hashem. And here, from the simcha of not serving Hashem, they came to the simcha of serving Hashem. Or the simcha of serving Hashem in one way, which was not the maybe the best kind.